All right, now we have Mark Mattson coming to us from Fordham University, who apparently listened to 86 versions of Foolish Heart. So he's going to share that with us.
That's a dirty job.
Is there a mandala?
No mandalas. No mandala here. But charts. Yes, charts. Just not circular. Hi, I'm a cognitive experimental psychologist. This is my seventh consecutive presentation at the conference since 2002. The first 2 years I talked about memory for Grateful Dead concerts. In 2004 I talked about buildups in the music of the Grateful Dead. And since 2005 I've been trying to combine my psychology research program on speech and action errors with my interest in the Grateful Dead. So the basic idea is to use errors to try to figure out what's going on in people's heads. To find out what's going on that underlies speech and action. And so, for example, if a groom-to-be says funeral instead of wedding, what does the bride-to-be infer from that? Or if somebody says post-mortem instead of post-modern. Now, I mean, then there are different kinds of things you can infer. There's sort of your mind leaps to the Freudian interpretation in both of these cases, but you know, there are other possible interpretations as well. So, oops, back. Okay. So I've been doing this for a while, as I said. In 2005, I looked at Mason's Children and doing that rag. And in 2006 and 2007, we looked at Here Comes Sunshine. And for this year, we're looking at Foolish Heart. And again, the idea is to look at what we can learn about memory and performance from analyzing all of these performances. And this is really an exceptional opportunity as psychologists because we have basically all the performances. And that's a rare thing when you're looking at errors. Okay. All right, so the basic procedure here was to listen to every version of Foolish Heart and to note the variations in the lyrics. Principally the lyrics, but also to some extent the arrangement. There were 87 performances of Foolish Heart. I was only able to get 86 of them. Darn. There's one that's not on the Internet Archive. And that was a few too many for me to listen to by myself, given the history of how long it took me to do these other things. So for the first time, I've recruited some undergraduate research assistants to work on this. So last semester, Jonathan DiPiero volunteered, not a deadhead. He listened to 44 versions of Foolish Heart. He was getting tired of it by the end. He listened to the soundboards that streamed online. I listened to the audience recordings because I could download those, and also they're a little bit harder to hear, so it's not really... I want to eventually have somebody else listen to all these performances and do inter-rater reliability and that kind of thing, particularly the errors, but I haven't done that yet. That's probably what this semester's research assistant, Alex Rabinovich, will be working on to some extent this semester. So Alex has been working since January on the master list of variations that we looked at. So that's the basic procedure. Now, one kind of variation that lends itself to quantification is the length of the performances. Now, I don't have the lengths for the online streaming soundboards, but I did look at all the audience tapes. And basically what I did was take each one, bring it to SoundForge, cut it to just the performance of Foolish Heart, so I could get a good time. Sometimes people don't make the same cuts at the same place I would. There were 42 of these that I had that I could look at out of this 87 performances. And for those 42, the mean length was 596 seconds, or just short of 10 minutes. So that's the average length of these. The shortest one was the first performance at 398 seconds, and the longest was number 78 at 850 seconds, or 14 minutes and 10 seconds. This scatter plot, here we have the performance number, so we have the first performance through the 87th performance here, and we have the length in seconds here. So this is the first performance. You can see that that's the shortest one here, and you can see that here's that longest one here. And so you see a general trend here, which is positive, they're getting longer, right? That's the idea. We can see that here, and this correlation coefficient tells us that's really a significant relationship between those two for the 42. Now, this compares with Mason's Children. Mason's Children actually got shorter as they tightened up the arrangement over the time that they did it. Doing that rag got significantly longer. The 1970s Here Comes Sunshine also got significantly longer, but the 90s Here Comes Sunshine stayed pretty much the same short length throughout. The arrangement was pretty tight when they redid it. So that's how it compares to the other performances we've looked at. All right. Now, here's the basic studio arrangement of the song, so we can look at some of the arrangement changes. It starts off with an introduction based on the keyboard guitar melody KGM. Let's see if this works. I don't know how that, if this is going to work or not, but maybe not. Okay, that's the keyboard guitar riff. I didn't have to sing it. Great. It starts off with that, then we have a verse, then we have that again, verse, that, verse, bridge, a jam, verse, and another riff, and then out. So how does what sections change length in order to produce longer versions? The ones in red. So first of all, the introduction with the keyboard guitar melody gets longer over time. At the beginning, they start off doing the riff basically four times at the beginning for about 15 seconds on the album. And then by the later versions, there were never less than a minute of introduction, and I timed one out at about 2 minutes and 10 seconds before they even start singing. So that's something that clearly got longer over time, the introduction. At the beginning, then they started doing the keyboard guitar riff twice with a slight modification in the second one. But later on, they started doing it four times, and that made that longer, and that goes here and here. Of course, the jams were variable in length, both of these. And then, quite interestingly, they had an extra verse, mostly verse four, 47 times. So 55% of the performances had another verse after the jam here, and then the riff, and maybe a little jamming, and then out.
Were those exclusively the last 47, or did they
no.
come and go?
No, they were spread out through the whole thing. It's I don't exactly know what was going on there. So, but that's yeah. Well, I'm not sure that that's the case. I mean, it is the case generally, I think, and I don't have data on. I didn't actually analyze the verse five for accuracy yet. That's another thing that's coming up. But my sense is that the fifth verse was sometimes more accurate than the fourth one, but not always. So, all right. So that's the. They were obviously longer when they had that extra verse by about a minute, and it's significantly longer. So that's pretty boring. Who would be surprised by that? So next we'll consider creative lyric variation. So we just talked about some of the changes in the arrangement. Next I want to talk about lyric variations, and then we'll talk about the things that I consider to be errors, where they don't seem to make sense, they're rare and so forth. So some changes in the arrangement that I think were errors, and then some lyric variations. But when you're trying to make a judgment about an error or a creative variation, you need to start somewhere. In classical music, you have the score. You have something to refer to. So what do we have to refer to in music that's basically improvisational, where the idea is to innovate every time? Well, I think that there are three perspectives we can consider here: the poet, the producer, and the performer. Okay, so somebody wrote the lyrics, we have a particular lyricist, and then we have some whoever produced the album, they made a choice about what to include there, and then we have the actual performances. So that's what I want to use those three in each case. Now I used, for the source of the lyrics, David Dodd's Complete Annotated Dead Lyrics, and here is verse one according to that. So here, this is the poet. Okay, so we have carve your name in ice and wind, search for where the rivers end or where the rivers start. Do everything that's in you that you feel to be your part, but never give your love, my friend, unto a foolish heart. This is not what's on the album, actually. Okay, it's a little bit different. They doesn't sing the word that, and of course there are two repetitions of foolish heart in the actual performances. Okay, so that's the producer for verse one. Now the actual performances were quite a bit different from that, actually. We have carve your name in ice and wind. That's there are only two errors on that in all performances. Almost always gets this line correct. But there's a lot of variability in the second line. Okay. According to the album, according to the written lyrics, it's search for where. There are only 8 performances out of the 86 that we looked at that where he actually sings that. And 6 of these were among the last 10 performances. And this is going to come up again and again. As I said last year, this is where, at the end of 1994, that's when they introduced the teleprompters. And my guess is that this is one of the songs on the teleprompter. But I'm sure there may be somebody here who can tell me whether that's the case or not. And there are there's really a change in the kinds of errors. There are fewer errors, and the kinds of errors change right at that point. So there's a lot of evidence that something different is going on at the end of 94. There were 42 performances with Look to Where, or a variant of that, instead of Search for Where. So that's really the majority response is Look to Where the Rivers End. There were 23 variants on Never Look, which can be seen as an anticipation of the later verse. Okay, and I think actually at the beginning, I think almost all the first 8 out of 10 performances were Never Look, and I think that may have been the original lyric, and then later on this one came up when they made the final decisions about the lyric. So I'm not sure. I wouldn't count that as an error. I think. But the later ones might have been errors since they had made a decision to change the lyrics at some point. They could be considered that. There were a number of other errors that occurred on this. Now, in line 3, mostly he's saying do everything, or it's not quite clear what he's saying, but there are 9 performances that we found where he's saying use everything that's in you as opposed to do everything that's in you. In most cases, there, as far as I heard, very few or no performances where they actually sing the that in this line. Now my research assistant never crossed out the butts on these at all, and I found that there were many missing butts on the tagline. This is what I call the tagline. Basically, it's the same in every verse. So I will need to go back at some point and have analyze the soundboards for whether this is present. But out of the 26, out of the 42 performances that I looked at, 26 had no butts at all. There were 14 with only one butt. One with 2 butts, and only one with 3 butts out of those things. Now, one of the things that makes this difficult is that it's harder to hear the beginning of the line, particularly on the audience tapes. And so I don't feel like this is always quite reliable, and I think that's probably what was going on with Jonathan, too, is it's a little tougher to hear the beginning of the line sometimes, particularly if the performer's not up to the microphone yet. That's one excuse. That could be seen as a performing error, though.
Mark, do you ever get the feeling when you're looking at it that the one-syllable words that get dropped like that and but, that this may just be a breath control thing for Garcia because he had so little to work with by the end?
Well, this is not uniformly at the end. This begins in 88, it's not that, but... I think that's always part of what's going on in these performances. That's why I'm saying. So for me, when I went back and did the analysis, I didn't count things as omissions if it was only one word. I didn't even count them as omissions if it was only. It had to be more than one word missing, particularly at the beginning of the line, for me to say that he left something out. Okay. All right. So here's verse 2: leap from ledges, high and wild, and so forth. On the album, it is Dare to Leap. Okay. And on the album is, I think I mentioned this to Jim last night, because in your talk you mentioned speaking directly from the heart, and that was the original lyric, but Jerry mainly on the album sings to the heart, and actually in performances that's the case also. Just skipping to that, there were 8 performances where he sings directly from the heart, including 5 of the last 6 performances. But there were 78 performances where he sang from the heart. Okay, so I think that's an interesting. It makes more sense to sing to the heart, I think, in the context, but from the heart. But he mostly sang to the heart. Then in line 1, according to the original lyric, supposed to be leap from ledges. There are only 8 leap from ledges. Guess where they are? 4 out of 6 are in the last 6 of the last 6 shows. There were 16 dare to leaps, or some variant on that, which is what was on the Built to Last record. Okay. The most common response was the one that I have here. There were 53 examples of learn to leap, or some variant on that, which I think is clearly influenced by the next line, learn to speak. So you could read this as an error in anticipation, or maybe that's that's a good sort of foreshadowing or something like that. Okay. Now, down here, you have in a number of the early performances, he sang King of Clowns or Queen of Clowns. There was gender equality for the first 22 performances with 11 of each. But after performance 22, there were only two more performances of Queen of Clowns. So that sort of dropped out over time. There were two performances where he sang King of Fools, and one where he sang Queen of Fools, which obviously Foolish Heart may be an influence on that. Now, on this one, my impression is that if he did sing, but it was usually on verse 2. So that's an observation. So
Fools is synonym for clown in that sense, too.
Yeah.
Jester, so fairly legitimate.
Yeah. All right, so here's verse 3. Okay, here's the verse 3 from the album. Never a weather chart, but the weather chart. Get rid of those buts and add that. Same thing every time. Now, in the actual performances, there was only really one additional variation here. There were 55 performances where he sang Brother and a Friend. There were 30 performances where he sang Brother or a Friend. And one performance where he sang Brother of a Friend, which makes somewhat less sense.
Brother of my friend is my brother.
And then next comes the bridge. Okay. And there's lyrics to the bridge. Same on the album. That one was pretty much the same. In terms of common performance variations here, there were 49 performances with Toss Your Dreams, which is the original lyric. There were 22 performances, a significant number, with Throw Your Dreams Away, or some variation on that. There was one Draw Your Dreams Away, one Take All Your Tears Away, and a number of errors involving calm or call or something like that. In line 2, there were 7 performances where he sang Turn On You instead of Turn Around. And I think they may have been working with that, because by the time these started showing up, I guess Vince, maybe Brent, was singing harmony on this. So they sort of had to be coordinated more at this point, and they did seem to be coordinated. So this might have been a thoughtful variation on it. There were 66 performances where he sang The Way You Went Astray, but 19 performances where he sang Things Went Astray. And number 29 is the last example, so that was generally a characteristic of the earlier versions of this, where he sang the Things Went Astray. And then there were 10 performances where he sang Cause You Grief instead of Cost You Sleep. That's really a hard one to hear, particularly on the audience ones, but both Jonathan and I heard it in a number of cases, so I think he really did sing that at least a number of times. That's an interesting one. And then there was one, the performance one, he's saying, a selfish heart is bad, but a foolish heart is worse. Okay. Okay, the verse 4, Bite the Hand, pretty much the same on the album. Common performance variations here. The correct line, Dare to Leap, occurred about 16 times. There were 8 other performances where dare was part of it. Dare to tread, dare to fall, dare to dream, variations like that. There were an equal number of performances where he sang learn to leap as opposed to dare to leap. And there were 14 performances where he sang look to where. So it's quite a lot of variability in this one. And in fact, overall, as I'll mention again later, this verse has far and away more errors than any other verse. So this is where he starts really running into trouble.
Okay. But you don't have any errors on Stoke the Fires of Paradise, that
one. Oh, these are not errors. These are what I consider to be not errors. These are the things they did often enough, so I think that they were deliberate variations. Now I want to talk about the errors.
Okay.
Okay, I'll be good with that. Okay, so arrangement errors. Most of these are cases where lines were swapped or verses were swapped. Lines 1 and 2 of verse 4 were switched. Verse 2 and 3 were switched. Line 3 of verses 2 and 3 were switched. That's a possible self-correction. Maybe he sang it one and he realized he did, so he did the other one when he got to the other one. On the bonus track from Built to Last, which is an excellent version I recommend, from 7/1989, verse 3 is repeated instead of verse 4, and then they do have the fifth verse on that, so he does the verse 4 again. That makes this one an unusual one.
So it goes 1, 2, 3, 3, 4?
Yeah. And then on just as one example, this is really the only one that I remember hearing where he really kind of screwed it up. Garcia went to the verse after only three of the repeats of this, and people didn't quite know what was going on. So that's a messy kind of thing. Also, in performance 82, he gets Jerry gets the keyboard guitar riff wrong the first two times. So this is again toward the end. Okay, common lyric errors. These are ones that were repeated a number of times. Singing the river's end. He's trying to sing the river's end from verse one. Instead, sings the river bend. That's an anticipation of verse three, line two. There were 13 examples of this. 12 of them were bend, one was bends. There were many exchanges between verse 1, line 2, and verse 3, line 2, which are both about the rivers and so forth. So there's a... And errors like this are more likely to occur when things are similar to each other. Okay. Another common lyric error was, a foolish heart will call on you to toss your dreams away, instead to call your dreams away. Doesn't really make much sense, and it's clearly we're able to read this as a perseveration of this call here, which is a common kind of error. There were eight of those, and sometimes it was call your dreams away, a few times it was call your tears away, one time it was calm your tears away, so some variation there. This is a classic one. A selfish heart is trouble, but us. A foolish heart is worse. A foolish heart is trouble, but a foolish heart is worse. Okay. Now, I mean, this is an overdetermined error, if there ever was one. You know, you're going to sing foolish over there, and you've been singing foolish all this time. You know, like how many times are there foolishes in this? You know, all of a sudden you got to sing selfish, right? So that's a tough one. There are 14 times that he sang foolish instead of selfish in this, one time he sang ish. And then bite the hand that bakes your bread becomes bite the hand that breaks your bread. Okay, what's going on there? Well, a couple of things. Obviously, it could be the R from here coming back here. We also have the phrase breaking bread and so forth. We can see this as an anticipation of R with some other factors. This is, by the way, the closest thing to the kinds of errors that I've studied in the laboratory. In my research program, we get people to make spoonerisms and partial spoonerisms in the laboratory. So this is like one of the things we do in the lab, actually. Okay.
How do you make them do that?
That'll have to be, save that one for later. Okay. Now this is probably what you were, I think Kay was thinking. Are there other errors on this one? Stoke the fires of paradise with coals from hell to start. Light the coals of paradise with coals from hell to start. Right? Okay, how does that make sense exactly? And there were 23 performances with light the coals of paradise with coals from hell to start. A lot of them. Okay, so many that if it made any sense, I would have treated it as a deliberate variation. But it doesn't seem to really make that much sense. There were two performances where it's light the fires of paradise. That one makes sense. And two, which is stoke the coals of paradise, which is just about as bad as light the coals. So the kinds of errors we've talked about here, there are omission errors. As I said, I only looked at cases where more than a word was left out or mumbled. Anticipations are cases where later lines show up in earlier lines. So verse 3, 2, line 2 shows up in verse 1, line 1. Never look. Oops, look for where the river ends. Perseverations, an earlier line shows up in a later line. Carve your name, bite the hand that bakes your bread. Okay. Now the large handout, only 10 of you got, I had no expectation we'd have quite this audience, has a list of all the rare errors. There were 37 errors that were relatively uncommon. So for example, in one performance, he sang, carve your name in glass and wind. That's one of only two errors on line one. And only one of two errors on the tagline was, never give my love, my friend, to a foolish heart. Only two errors on those two lines. Okay. Now, when I talked about Here Comes Sunshine, one of the things that we observed was that the errors, when you anticipated or perseverated, they tended to be between the same lines in the performance. So on this chart, we have line one, line two, line three, and second verse, and third verse. And you see, generally the lines are going straight down. There's a few that cross over, but mainly they're straight up and down. So you're getting the same part of the next line interfering, basically. And I didn't do a complete analysis yet of Foolish Heart, but it's very clear that that's a very strong effect here, too. So you get the first line confused with the first line of each verse. You get the second line confused with the second line, and so forth. That's an important regularity here. And that's the kind of thing, as a psychologist, that I'm really hoping to get from this. What kind of regularities are there that we see in the laboratory that we can also see in real-world performances like this? So anticipations and perseverations were almost always from the same line in different verses. There were only, in terms of, some verses were not prone to errors. So verse 1, line 1, were only two errors on that through all the performances, only two errors on the tagline of each verse. On the other hand, there were some that were particularly susceptible. Verse 4, most of the greater number of errors on that verse than any of the others. Okay, and I already said that. All right. So, now, one of the things that somebody asked me yesterday is, your talk tomorrow going to be as depressing as last year? in the sense that, what was particularly depressing last year is that there were no performances of Here Comes Sunshine that were completely accurate in the 1990s. And that was a little disturbing to, I think, most of us. Well, you can breathe a sigh of relief. There are actually three performances of Foolish Heart during the time period that were not the same as the record, not the same as the poet, but were within the range of variations that we talked about in the first section. And these were 10-26-89, 5-6-90, and 9-10-90, for those of you who want to quickly write back down.
Now,
okay. 10-26-89. 5-6-90, and 9-10-90.
Thank you.
Now, there's a history of synchronicity in preparing for this conference in the past, and this year is no different. I was browsing through the library shelves a couple of weeks ago when I saw the Kivey book here, which opened to a reprinted journal article called Ars Perfecta, Toward Perfection in Musical Performances. On page 111, he writes, "The major purpose of this paper is to explore the question, is there such a thing as the perfect performance of a musical work? Its major thesis is that there is not. There can be many equally good, equally admirable, and equally successful performances of the same musical composition, but no single perfect or ideal performance." Amen.
We'll give Mark a chance for a couple of questions while I get my presentation set up. So go ahead, Mark.
Okay. Yeah, I got a question about your alignment between terms and categories. you seem to restrict the term error to changes that don't make sense. What I've noticed in typing over the last 10 years is that about 50% of my typing errors come out as synonyms or possible words.
Mm-hmm. And it's very high level typing you're doing there.
and this didn't used to be the case.
Yeah,
when
that's
I,
what I'm
you
saying.
Know, in my early years of typing, and I think what that means is that you become so used to certain verbal patterns that you will substitute them erroneously, but they
right.
still make sense.
Mm-hmm. Like another. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that suggests to me that your first category actually may have errors that happen to make sense.
Totally. I totally agree with that. The work that my mentor did, for example, using these laboratory errors, showed, for example, that people speak are more likely to make speech errors that come out to be words than non-words,
exactly.
for example.
Exactly.
So there's a tendency for things to make sense in terms of errors. So I would certainly agree that this is a generous estimate in terms of the creative variations. But on the other hand, what I was trying to go for is these are the ones I can be pretty sure are errors
exactly.
at one time.
So
it's a conservative
really
analysis
of errors.
It's basically, that's, yeah,
right.
I totally agree. It's a conservative analysis of their errors.
For your duration plot, that was just timings?
I edited them down to, so there wasn't, you know, not, if it was the beginning of the set, something like the beginning of the set would be there, you know, tuning up, I delete the tuning, delete the into the next song, and it's using sound for just the performance.
Have you thought about doing bars, rather, you know, or using, you know, bar, you know, the...
Bar graph, the musical bars,
rather than duration, because it's a function of tempo.
Tempo. We had this discussion. I tried last year after the conference to get a thing where I could tap to get the tempos, and I couldn't get it to work. I got one that would take MP3 files and give you back beats per minute, and it was wildly variable. So I haven't had a chance to look at this. I bet there's got to be something in the psychoacoustics literature or something like that where there's some agreed upon method for doing this. That's what I have to find eventually. But I tried. I swear, David. That's going to be part of it. But it's not the whole story. Just from listening to them, the tempos are not that variable, and certainly it's not the case that the really long ones are long because they're slower. Okay, that's not the case.
Okay, one more quick question from Stanley.
Did you make an analysis of who made the errors? One person, or the total band?
Well, I was focusing on Garcia's errors here, basically. Yeah. The only place it's really tricky is on the bridge where they're singing harmony. And there was one case there, I have to admit, was a little ambiguous to me. I think in one case, one of them sang Away and the other one sang Astray or something like that. And it's really hard to I couldn't tell exactly what was going on there. But Jerry's the only one who sings the verses. It's only the bridge where anybody else comes in.
Because what's coming to mind, obviously, is whether the errors correlated with his drug use.
Yeah. I think the drug use was pretty much the whole time, right?
Which drug?
But we speculated last year about whether there were other aspects of cognitive functioning that were, you know, going downhill in the 90s, yeah, particularly, which would explain the difference between the 90s, right, and 70s performances of Here Comes Sunshine. I think that all these things like drug use, other kinds of cognitive deficits, and so forth, are things we can never really know for sure about for a particular performance. And they're certainly stage setters for errors, but they, for example, have no influence about whether the errors would be from the same part of the metrical structure. That's why I think those are particularly interesting to me. Thank you, folks. Sorry.
You may have damaged your data there. Sorry.
Just destroyed everything.
Your whole paper's lost. All right.